Okay, we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. And Cheryl, would you call the roll?
Chairman Beck?
Here.
Brooks?
Present.
Jay?
Present.
Norby?
Here.
Challenger? Reese?
Present.
Woods?
Here.
The commission would like to ask everybody to, including themselves, to turn their cell phones off for the duration here. And do we have any minutes? We do have minutes, I believe.
Move for approval on the, what's the date?
Second.
September 24th.
September 24th, meeting minutes.
Second from somebody?
Second.
Any discussion, please vote. That motion passes unanimously with Commissioner Pallinger absent. For members of the public, their speaker slips out in the hall. Commissioner Pallinger just showed up. And we have three different colors, white, pink, and green. White is neutral, pink is opposition, green is supporting. When you come to the podium, you have 3 minutes. When the yellow light comes on, you have 1 minute remaining. Please summarize. When the red light comes on, you need to return to your seat. There's a display option if you have something to show the public and the commission that will project onto the screen there, and it's over to the left of the podium, which the staff can help you with if you need any assistance. There's an appeal process described. if you want to appeal a planning commission decision, you can appeal according to the process described on the last page of the agenda. And this is an opportunity for any members of the public to address the commission on a non-agenda item. We can't take action, but we can refer some actions to staff. Is there anybody who wants to address the commission? Okay. And announcements?
Commissioner Beck, we do have a couple. One is an errata sheet for item number 2 that's been distributed to you. Also, I'm proud to announce that last night AEP had their awards banquet, and the county had submitted their water efficient landscape design manual and ordinance as part of a possible candidate, and we won that award, the Outstanding Environmental Resource Document Award for that ordinance. As you recall, you guys voted on that, recommended approval. The board adopted that a few months back, and again, we're very proud to receive that award from AEP.
That is good news. That is very good news. That was a very good document, and I think it's going to make a difference as projects move forward in the future. Any proposed items for continuance today?
No, there are no requests for continuance.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure there's no consent items either, so.
No, both items have been pulled.
Okay, we'll go ahead and get started then. Agenda item number 1.
Thank you and good morning, Chairman Beck and members of the Planning Commission. My name is Marcus Lubich, Project Manager with the Department of Planning and Land Use. Item number 1 is Richland Towers, a request for a major use permit modification for a television broadcasting tower. This is a request to authorize the installation and operation of a 270-foot high broadcasting tower in an existing television transmission facility. The proposed tower would be capable of accommodating up to 9 television and radio broadcasting towers and would replace a previously existing equipment building and tower that were damaged and subsequently removed following the 2007 Harris fires. The proposed tower would sit atop San Miguel Mountain on a 10-acre parcel located 2 miles south of Highway 94 in the Jamul de Zora Community Plan area. The project has one outstanding issue with regard to private road maintenance. Some residents of Millar Ranch Road have requested that the applicant be solely responsible for the improvement and maintenance of Millar Ranch Road. Millar Ranch Road is a private road that runs 4.5 miles from Highway 94 to the top of San Miguel Mountain, providing access to over 35 residential parcels in San Miguel Mountain. The entire road is paved except for 2 unpaved segments shown here, which total 0.25 miles. In addition to the applicant offering to make a fair share contribution for the improvement and maintenance of Millar Ranch Road, the proposed modification has been conditioned to require the photographs of the road before and after construction, and that would require the applicant to repair any damages caused to the road during construction and operation of the proposed tower. Staff has determined that requiring the applicant to be solely responsible for improving and maintaining the road would be out of proportion with the impacts associated with the project, especially considering the proposed tower is unmanned, is at an existing facility, and Millar Ranch Road is a private road that provides access to over 40 parcels. On June 8th, 2010, the planning group voted to recommend approval with a condition requiring the removal of any towers within 2 years of being decommissioned. The proposed major use permit modification is conditioned to require the removal of all decommissioned towers within 90 days. The proposed tower would be consistent with the existing community character and would not create a harmful effect on the surrounding area. Therefore, since all of the required findings for the granting of a major use permit modification can be made, staff recommends approval of the proposed project. That concludes staff's presentation.
Any questions of staff? Okay, we'll go ahead. We have just two speakers. Richard Valdez, I assume, is representing the company, perhaps, and Aaron Burris in opposition.
Good morning. My name is Richard Valdez. I am a consultant to the applicant and property owner. And we are, I do have them here in attendance as well, if there are any questions for them that they can answer. This tower has got a couple of components to it. It's a normal lattice tower. It has got a broadband component in the upper section. It will allow different types of uses, and we think it'll also lead to consolidation of some of the equipment that's up there on the mountain right now that some of the existing antennas and devices may merge or come over to this new tower. So we think it is a positive thing in the long term. You know, we weren't originally aware of the issues about the private road when we first made this application. The current owner has only owned the property a short period of time, a little bit less than 2 years. But we've now become aware of the road conditions, and we understand the fairness of it all. And we have agreed with staff that we would leave the road in as good of a condition as we found it, or better. And we also want to be a good neighbor and participate in the long-term maintenance and upkeep of that road. So we're more than happy to meet with the property owners, interested people. We've got our business cards, our contact numbers, and we, like I say, we want to be a good neighbor here. And with that, we agree with the conditions of approval, and we're available for questions and answers.
I have a question. You mentioned that you might be consolidating other facilities up there. What are the prospects of that?
I think the owner would be better to answer that than I, but some of it's dependent on the economy. I think there's already one tenant, I think, that is signed up as an anchor tenant, so to speak, mm-hmm. that would prime the pump. But the rest of the timing, I mean, the prospects are good. It's just the timing is the biggest question.
Okay, and does the property owner own the whole 10 acres at the top, where the majority of those facilities are, or just the ground underneath this one?
No, there's several ownerships on the top of the mountain, okay. So it's a little bit confusing there. You can kind of see the semi-rectangular type shaped parcel, and there's like a...
That's yours?
No. yes, there's a hole in the donut,
right.
And we don't own the centerpiece. That's owned by McGraw-Hill, I believe.
I see. Okay.
So, right.
Any other questions? Aaron Burris?
Hi, my name is Aaron Burris. I live at 2918 Miller Ranch Road. As mentioned, Miller Ranch Road is about 4.6 miles long. The challenge with Miller Ranch Road is there are six distinct areas of responsibility for maintenance of that road, including two, which are the maintenance responsibility of the residents up there. Those are both the unpaved, unmaintained portions of the road. In the major use permit documents, there's reference to participation being conveyed through an existing private road association. That private road association only applies to approximately half a mile section of that road. The unpaved sections have been partially maintained by residents up there. There is quite a substantial amount of traffic destined for the top of the mountain for radio tower use, not from a single entity, but as a whole with all the different towers and equipment that's up there. There is quite a bit of traffic for that purpose. I'm not here to try to derail this project or postpone it or you know, I like having the towers up there. It's a cool landmark and it looks neat. But I'm just asking that there be some consideration given for the residents who live up there that deal with the consequences of this traffic. Like I mentioned, the PRD doesn't really apply to this project, since that section of road has little to no maintenance ever done on it, and it's in beautiful condition all the time. The sections that are in question are the unpaved, unmaintained sections of the road.
You heard the testimony, and in the staff report, it's pretty clear that they're going to do before and after pictures to ensure that none of the activities that take place there are going to negatively affect what's on the ground today. And then there's the issue of ongoing maintenance.
Right.
And it sounds like you've got a very complicated, messy situation with a private road, which we can't deal with
right.
specifically. Has there ever been an attempt to have a road maintenance agreement with all the users for the entire 4.5 miles?
I don't know that. I know there has been some work to try. I know in this picture here, the bottom left picture, both of the pictures on the left are actually look much better than they normally do. Me and about 4 or 5 other residents up there spent about 14 hours on a tractor with some asphalt, smoothing it out ourselves and filling in the potholes. But the lower left picture is a very interesting parcel. It's a Caltrans-owned parcel with an easement over it, and there's a quite a dispute on who is actually responsible for that. There's been an easement granted in 1970 to the parcel owners on the mountain, but it's my understanding that that easement was granted before a majority of those towers were constructed, and that responsibility would be for the residential parcels on that road.
Do the users at the top of the hill contribute to the maintenance of the unpaved sections?
No.
They do?
They do not.
They do not?
No. As far as I know today, they do not.
But they travel through them to get to the top of the hill, of course.
That's correct. It's a single ingress and egress over the entirety of Miller Ranch Road.
Wow. Well.
So this would be the first tenant that will contribute to that portion.
Other than the residential.
Other than the residential.
Yes, that's correct.
And Caltrans is one of the others, I understand, that.
One of the others that does not contribute.
Does not contribute. And, of course, we can't do anything about that.
Well, this is kind of a messy situation that somebody needs to take the bulls by the horn and try to convene everybody. And it seems like a fair share contribution is perfectly reasonable. And some of these agencies can afford to participate, but it's not going to happen by itself. So maybe you and your neighbors can get together.
Right.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I would request that the staff, upon the next application for renewal, relocation, or something else in there, contact all the other operators on the mountaintop and ask them to cooperate jointly with respect to the preservation of access for all property owners up on the mountain, and form some sort of a road maintenance agreement with each other as a condition bringing the next project forward. I don't want to stop this guy because he's already in the pipeline. He's ready to go forward. But the next guy coming through, we should say, hey, this has been long enough. It's been there for 20, 30 years. I can see it from my house. We're looking out my window. I can see these. And I'd like to see a lot fewer up there. None like you. I don't think they're beautiful. But anyway, going up and down that road, we should put as a condition of the next guy to at least attempt to do so reasonably, professionally to do so. Okay.
Commissioner Brooks, or Woods, or others? Sorry.
Yeah, my comment there is I agree with my colleague, but in reality, they have to agree to join a maintenance agreement association in some fashion.
I said make a reasonable effort.
Yeah. Reasonable effort, but not condition the nets.
Not
okay, all right.
The condition would be they attempt to make an attempt to getting a, force them at least to try and work on it, and if they can't work on it, then fine.
Okay.
All right, any further discussion, questions? Entertain a motion. Thank you, sir.
Staff recommendation with that one condition.
Second.
Discussion? Please vote. That motion passes unanimously with all commissioners present. Okay, let's go to the Borrego project.
We're gonna can we take a couple minutes? Apparently our speaker's not working, so
chairs up here.
Good morning, Chairman Beck, member of the Planning Commission. Item number two is the Urus Borrego Solar Project. The project site is located north of the Borrego Valley Airport between Palm Canyon and Borrego Valley Road in the Borrego Springs community. The following is an aerial view of the project site, which is located north of the airport, as indicated here in yellow. The applicant's request is for two unmanned off-site photovoltaic solar energy systems. The combined project area is 341 acres, of which 288 acres is located on private property with limited access. A 53-acre portion of the project would be located on a county-owned parcel, which is part of the Borrego Valley Airport. Upon approval of the major use permits, a lease agreement would have to be executed by the county, and the lease would authorize the use of the county airport land as a photovoltaic solar energy system, and would also provide access to the main project site. The photos that you see here are a typical PV solar project. The picture to the right upper corner is a typical three-panel system with the panels mounted one above another. The picture that you see in the lower right corner is a typical PV array, which is 10 acres, which equals 1 megawatt. The white structure is the inverter structure. The following are four main concerns that were presented during the CEQA public review period of the project. A visual resource report was prepared for the project. The report is bound as a separate attachment to your staff report. The report evaluated the prominent public roadways and vantage points within the project view shed and provided a visual simulations to assess the impacts. The following five visual simulations are from the visual analysis that show what the project would look like in the view shed. The following simulation is taken from the Borrego Valley Airport, which is approximately 0.2 miles from the project site. This is the closest view of the project from public viewpoint. The project does not have any appearance of bulk or scale because of the distance and uniform height of the structures. This view is of the project simulation from Palm Canyon Road looking east towards the airport. From ground level, the project site creates a blending effect with the horizon due to the color of the project and the rolling flat topography and vegetation. As the blending effect increases with the 1.5 mile distance from the project, it reduces any appearance of bulk and scale. This view of the project is from Palm Canyon looking west towards the airport. The project appears to be a horizontal drab line with a uniform height at a distance of 1.2 miles. The nearest residential use is located to the north and would have a similar view as indicated here. These simulations are from County Sign Route 22, and they were taken from the highest elevation within the project view shed. The top photo shows the existing view of the valley without the project. The bottom is a simulation with the proposed project. At a long distance of 4.2 miles, the project appears to be a dark spot on the valley floor that is similar with the surrounding agricultural lands to the northwest of the project site. This simulation is from Fonts Point, and it's located within the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. Excuse me. As like a view in, from S-22, the project is over 8 miles away and appears to be a dark spot on the valley floor. That is consistent with the surrounding uses. The visual analysis excuse me, the visual analysis concluded that there would be not be any substantial adverse changes that would affect the overall visual quality or character of the community. Therefore, the project complies with the county guidelines for determining significance, which results in a less than significant impact to visual resources. The second issue that was evaluated was glare from the solar panels. Concerns were raised that the PV solar arrays would have reflective surface glare that could adversely affect day views in the area and the Borrego Valley Airport. Staff reevaluated the solar glare and concluded that there would be minimal glare from the PV solar arrays because the solar panels are designed to absorb as much light as possible, and also they would be conditioned to have an anti-reflective coating on the panels. By using an anti-reflective coating, the appearance of glare may appear to look like a body of water on a cloudy day. The project was also reviewed by the FAA and the Regional Airport Authority and the County DPW Airports Division, which all issued a determination of no hazard, and the project is considered to be compatible with use within the airport zone. The reduced reflectivity of the PV solar panels with an AR coating would not adversely affect daytime views in the airport, within the area. Therefore, the impacts of glare will be still less than significant. The third issue that we evaluated was the overall quantity of the groundwater that would be required for construction and ongoing panel washing. The calculations were recalculated to be a bit more accurate. The anticipated annual water usage for the project would be 4.4 acre feet, which is equivalent to about four residential units in the Borrego community. Mitigation has been provided that offsets the groundwater usage by fallowing active agricultural lands. An additional mitigation measure was added that would limit the amount of water that they could use on an annual basis. Therefore, the project complies with CEQA and also complies with the county's groundwater ordinance. The fourth major issue is that there was various comment letters received during public review which challenged the adequacy of the mitigated negative declaration. The department prepared the draft MND and circulated it for a 30-day public review period. As a result of the comments received, revisions were made to the MND and the technical studies. However, staff was able to adequately respond to each comment and no significant unmitigable impacts were identified. As such, the MND complies with the requirements of CEQA and the preparation of an EIR is not required because no impacts or a fair argument was raised.
Are there organized presentations?
Yes, sir. Okay. On July 8, 2010, the Borrego Springs sponsor group voted to deny the project. The community denied the project for the following two reasons. It is not consistent with the draft Borrego Springs community plan, and they felt that an EIR should be required because of the potential environmental effects. The department disagrees with the sponsor group because a draft planning document cannot be used in formulating a decision. Also, the draft MND is appropriate because all impacts have been mitigated below a level of significance.
Excellent.
In summary, the major use permits would be consistent with the county zoning ordinance, the current desert sub-regional plan, the county general plan, and the Borrego Springs Airport land use compatibility plan. The project also complies with the requirements of CEQA, and all impacts would be mitigated below a level of significance. Therefore, the department recommends to the Planning Commission grant the major use permits, make the findings, impose the requirements and conditions as set forth in the form of decisions, and adopt the environmental findings. That concludes staff's presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one technical point to get clear about, and then some other questions later, perhaps. The form of decision identifies the water mitigation at 3.38 acre feet per year, I think. Another place in the responses to comments, I think, identifies the mitigation as 3.5 acre feet per year. The staff report says with contingencies it's going to be 4.0 acre feet per year. Would you clarify just exactly what it is? Because I understood the logic behind the 4.0. So why isn't that in the form of decision?
Chairman Beck, there's two major use permits, so the mitigation was actually split between the two major use permits proportionally.
So the net is four?
Yes.
And does the form of decision indicate that split?
Yes, it does. Each mitigation measure has a proportion to the proportion of land that they occupy. So the numbers all add up to four.
I got you. Okay, thanks. Any other questions of staff? Commissioner Norby and then Reese.
With respect to the condition that they fallow ag land, and I'm aware it's mostly grapefruit and citrus out there, which is very, very water intensive, but could we not also just allow a different crop to grow, a cactus or some other form of ag that is not water intensive, as long as they meet the requirement of fallow is a word that I, you know, my renewable energy is great and ag is great for the county, and so I'm a little bit hesitant to take ag out of production if we can have some different wording there.
Commissioner Norby, through the chair, generally we take out the agricultural uses because it is difficult from a conditioning perspective to say that X, Y, and Z crops are allowed to be grown but others are not. It'd also be an enforcement and monitoring nightmare to go out and routinely inspect that.
When we apply this condition and we fallow an acre or two, I think it was an acre of citrus equals the 4 acre feet. Nothing grows there from that point forward. It's out of ag production. Is that?
That's correct.
Okay. And then a couple other questions. There's two facilities. There's more, but there's two that I'm aware of that have been in existence for the last 2 years. One is the NRG plant out in Blythe, and you had several photos from that plant. The other one, which is a similar size, roughly 300 acres, 25 to 30 megawatts, and then the other one is in Nellis Air Force Base, which is a somewhat smaller, about 150-acre, using slightly different photovoltaic technology. When we applied the conditions and the mitigations and the monitoring, were those two realize the Anza-Borrego area is unique and different, but these are similar desert-type climates. Were those the experiences of those two facilities, were they looked at in terms of what's actually happening on the ground the last 2 years with respect to all the monitoring and mitigation measures?
Through the chair, Commissioner Norby, we did not consider those other projects. We relied on the expertise and experience that Eurus Energy brought, and also through the public process, through the public review of, you know, getting what the community wants as far as mitigation measures. So.
Okay. The one area that I was concerned with in the report is there's lots of them with respect to the various animal life, but one was the lizard, and we're going to go 6 inches underneath the ground, and we're going to conduct a fence, and we're going to remove the lizards during construction, and then I don't know if we rehabilitate after construction, but my guess is not, and they don't get to live there. You know, if the experience, I'm sure that similar conditions or conditions were put on the Nellis project and were put on the Blythe project, and perhaps there's some real-world experience whether this is an issue or not, or if it's worse than we thought, or you know, this is the county. I don't know what the largest current solar installation in the county is, but I'm going to guess it's below 1 megawatt, and this is probably something that's a 30 or 40 full-time or more, you know, increase. And so it would just be great if we could have that, I guess, in the future and as we develop our mitigation and monitoring requirements.
Commissioner Reese.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I recall, we did the Borrego Springs Airport for the land use plan for that, and that was the only airport that had a curious categorization for the property north of the airport. And what was that? Was that a 2 or a 3 or a 5? What was that category for the area, which was considered acrobatic training area, which seems to bear a strange resemblance to this area we're talking about now for solar panels? Is that the same piece of land?
Through the chair, Commissioner Reese, I believe the area that you're talking about is the review areas within the airport land use compatibility plan.
Yes.
I don't have a graphic of that right now, but the review areas from the airport, as indicated here, kind of stretch out this way, and it falls in with within review area 1, which, you know, requires the airport regional airport authority to review the project.
That, if you look at, I think those boundaries are almost coterminous with that box that was drawn to the north. Normally, Area 1 is a trapezoidal area off the end of the runway. And now we've got this box on the other side that has basically been downzoned by the CLUP to clear zone for aircraft landing, and it's way up there in the boonies, and you can't really do anything with it. I was just wondering, was that coordinated as part of this overall development, or what happened? It seems very strange and coincidental.
Through the chair, Commissioner Reese, I'm not sure the thinking behind the adoption of the airport plan, but DPW Airports, Pete Drinkwater, the director, is here to answer any specific questions that could be asked of him.
Okay. Pete?
Good morning, members of the Planning Commission. Thank you for the question regarding the aerobatic box. That has been much in discussion recently, and the FAA has, as of last week, finally made approval for the waiver, which went through the environmental review process, and public comment, I guess, had been submitted. They had done their environmental review. It is contained inside, or a part of it, within that area where the solar farm would be operating. I would invite Eurus Energy to comment also, because a condition that we had concerns with on this development was that the aerobatic box markings on the ground would be accommodated. And they assured us that they would work with the aerobatic club, and that those markings and requirements for the safety area and the markings for the box would be accommodated. So if you don't mind, because that is a question that has come up previously, maybe Eurus Energy could comment on that as well.
Okay. I think we're getting far afield from my question. My question was, it seems so coincidental that we put this unusual box for aerobatics, which is the only one we did in the whole county, and then suddenly we're having a solar energy project that seems to be within that same box.
Well, I think the answer to the question is it was a compatible land use based on the airport land use plan. And the box has existed there for many, many, many years. And this land that we're including in as part of the lease is buffer zone property for the airport. And there's very limited use for that type of property anyway. So I think it's more coincidental, but it does fit compatibly.
But one of the reasons limited use for the property is it's zoned in Area 1.
Correct.
Well, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, what I'm saying. You see what I mean?
Did we deliberately
downzone somebody's property with the use of the airport authority to basically script the value so that we could stick a solar panel in it?
The compatibility zone was designated based on airport operations and the use overflight area of the land, not based on the solar farm.
Okay.
If you look at the general airport land use compatibility plans and the zoning and the way they want intensity and densities around airports, there's nothing, to my knowledge, that has scripted this specifically for a solar farm.
Okay. I'll stop the question. We're getting way far afield, and I'm sorry for bothering the rest of my commissioners.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, that's all right. That's an interesting point. Mr. Drinkwater may come back for his speaker's time. So we'll go ahead and start with public. Any other questions? If not, we'll go ahead and start with public testimony and the proponents. Mr. Tomlinson, you have an organized presentation. How much time are you asking for?
Mr. Chairman, good morning. Commissioners, Chris Brown with the Eurus team. 12 minutes would be good if that's agreeable to the commission. And the
yes,
chair.
It is.
Okay. My name is Chris Brown. I'm with Alcabee Consulting Group, 402 West Broadway, part of the Eurus development team. You're going to be hearing from David Tomlinson, who is our project manager, followed by Cindy Elridge. And then, of course, we'd respectfully request additional time at the end to do any rebuttal if necessary. At this time, I'd like to introduce Mr. David Tomlinson.
Thank you, commissioners. My name is Dave Tomlinson, and thank you, Chris. My name is David Tomlinson. I'm with Eurus Energy, and our address is 4660 La Jolla Village Drive. I'm here to talk to you about our Abrego Solar Farm project and some of the benefits of the project, as well as a little bit of who Eurus Energy is. Eurus Energy was started developing renewable energy projects in the U.S. in 1987. We've been headquartered in San Diego since that time. To date, we are currently in construction of 45 megawatts of PV solar farm in Central California. We also have in operation 500 megawatts of installed wind capacity and nearly 2,000 megawatts of wind worldwide. We are currently the seventh largest photovoltaic solar developer in the U.S. We have a commitment to develop, own, and operate environmentally responsible renewable energy project farms, and we also are a long-term member of this community and intend to maintain long-term memberships in the communities that where we work. This is a picture of a typical solar farm. This is virtually identical to the farm that we are proposing in Borrego. This project actually is located in Mendota in Central California. Maybe a little greener there than in Borrego.
Good thing.
Yeah. Except in February. We've seen this slide before. I wanted to talk a little bit about how we arrived at this location. We spent a great deal of time looking for projects in San Diego County, and then, of course, quickly moved to Borrego, where it has excellent solar insulation. But within Borrego, we spent a considerable amount of time identifying what we believe to be the best location for a solar energy farm. We had to take into account several factors. One, of course, is proximity to the transmission system and the substation for interconnection. We are 1 mile to the east of the substation, the Borrego Valley substation, which is that line in the north in the northwest corner. In addition to that, we have to take into consideration the proximity, the topography. We wanted to site the project away from mountains where there might be shading in the afternoon. We also need to site the project on fairly flat land to minimize the amount of grading and also to avoid areas of significant flooding, flash flood areas, which, of course, would be very difficult to build in. In addition to that, we were very careful to identify a location that we believed had the best compatible land use. And, of course, we selected that facility next to the airport. There have been a number of projects in the U.S. that have been sited near airports. It's considered a very compatible use. I will say, in regards to the acrobatic box, we did not realize that there was an acrobatic box there until somewhat later into the project. We did, however, we did learn about the box. I did talk with the group. If you look very closely, you can see their panels. We actually commented on the EA that was done for that project to raise the limit to 200 feet so that we could be compatible, both work there. And we have talked to them about allowing them access on our project to do their training, which I think they do twice a year. So we've worked with them on this. Also, other compatible land use to the southwest is a cement facility, a microwave tower, kind of an old abandoned junkyard or storage area. So it's a very industrial area. And that's kind of why we chose that. Actually, to the south of the airport, there is disturbed land, but that is sensitive habitat. And so one of the last and most important aspects is to find a site that has no significant environmental impacts. And we looked very carefully in Borrego, first at a screening level, and then followed on by very detailed studies on this site. We're happy to report that there are no state or federally listed species on this site. Furthermore, we had consultations with Cal Fish and Game and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and both of those agencies chose not to submit a letter of comment on this project, which is very rare. Some of the project benefits, of course, we're proposing to produce up to 46 megawatts of clean, quiet, non-polluting renewable energy. That's enough to power at maximum output nearly 37,000 homes. An added benefit is the 44,000 tons of CO2, which will be offset by per year. And of course, we will not be generating any mercury or other pollutants that are commonly associated with fossil fuel. Additionally, there is an economic benefit to these projects. There will be an approximate 10-month construction project, and during that time, up to 200 individuals, we anticipate up to 200 individuals will be employed on construction at peak. I'd like to spend a minute or two to talk about our community outreach. We believe this is very important in all the projects that we develop. We began our outreach very early on in the process, prior to even selecting a site. We met with the local sponsor group. We met with various community members. We met with the Borrego State Park and Anza Borrego Foundation and listened to what they said and what they thought was an acceptable location for the project. Once the application was submitted, we participated in several sponsor group meetings, listened to their issues and concerns, and adjusted the project to that effect. I'd like to just kind of quickly go over the in response to their comments. Our initial site layout here had three project areas. There were concerns about the visual impacts of the project to the southwest. We removed that project so that there would be this project would be very difficult to see from public right-of-ways. They were concerned about the amount of grading that we were going to do and the impact to the habitat, so we revised the project to reduce the grading and to avoid areas of desert sand dune. We also, and this is a revised layout, we also created areas of open space to avoid the more sensitive areas. Just so that you can see the comparison between the two, actually I should add to this that our initial look, we were actually looking at the entire 144-acre parcel of which included more of the airport, and again downsized it and made it smaller to address some of these concerns. And with this slide, I'd like to pass it over to my colleague Cindy.
Mr. Chairman,
to the organized presentation, you have 4 minutes remaining.
Commissioner Brooks also has some questions. Could we wait till the organized is done, and then we'll probably have some questions for you. Cindy, you can come up.
Thank you. I'm going to be real quick anyway. Of course, we believe and the county staff believe that this project is consistent with all applicable federal, state, and local regulations, including CEQA, including the general plan, the zone requirements, et cetera, and that the MND is the appropriate CEQA document in this instance. Dave mentioned that the project proponent has been working with the community for 2 years now. I don't know that he mentioned it's 2 years. So there's been quite a lot of community involvement. We appreciate that. We appreciate the time that the community took to not only meet with URIS over the months, but also to comment on the draft MND. Commissioner Norby, you asked about the lizards. And just for a little bit of clarification, it's my understanding, not being a biologist, that this thing called a lizard fence goes around the project property. The biologists go out. If there are any lizards inside the fence, they take the lizards out, relocate them. After the project is all constructed, the fence comes out. And so then the lizards can come back in if they want to. You may have noticed that there's an air quality and dust control condition on each MUP. And one of the options for that dust control is a revegetation of the site under the panels. We don't know at this point in time if that's going to be feasible. So thank you.
Okay. You folks want to conclude, and then we'll see if there's questions from the commission.
I think those are our concluding statements, other than to say that we are very proud of this project, and we think it's a very well-sited project, and we hope that you'll approve.
Okay, why don't you stay at the podium there, Commissioner Brooks first, and then Dave.
Thank you. It's directly to you, Mr. Tomlinson. A couple of things. One, you mentioned construction, the number of employees that will be that it take to build this, and what was that number again?
Our estimate is up to 200 employees.
We said for what period of time?
Well, that would be at peak construction. So these projects, so there is a period of time when you have a lot of people on site kind of bolting it together, if you will.
Now, this seems to be a specialty type construction. My concern is always is that will you be bringing people in to construct this? That does not help the local economy.
Absolutely.
So would you explain how you propose to address that?
Sure. We are, as I mentioned, currently in construction on a project right now, but based on our estimates, we believe that in general that approximately 30% of the labor force can be local. Borrego is a very small community, so we would expect to use all available labor that is qualified. And these projects require a combination of skilled and unskilled labor, so certainly skilled labor may have to be imported, but, you know, unskilled labor could be local if it's available, or if skilled labor is available also, of course. That would be the most cost-effective solution.
Okay, and you seek to find that. Final question in that area. Maintenance. How many employees would it take to maintain this on an annual basis?
So
what
we,
period?
We anticipate 2 to 4 full-time employees. Kind of, they're going to be located in an office in the town. It'd be a small office so that people could come see about the project. And we anticipate potentially a daily kind of trip out there to make sure everything's working properly. Also, during periodic panel cleaning, we anticipate 30 or so people that would be out there for a period of a few weeks. And that would happen between 0 and 4 times a year.
Thank you. Thank you.
Commissioner Day, followed by Commissioner Woods.
So did you say you have a project under construction now?
Yes, we do.
So I missed that then. Where is that?
That's it's just outside Avenal, California, in Central California, better, you know, near Kettleman Hills.
Okay. And then where else are your PV projects located?
Operational. I mean, we have several projects that are under, we're evaluating sites for development. We do have actually another project that's in operation, which is in Korea, but the project in California, this is a relatively new venture for what we call utility scale projects, which are large projects like this.
And to Commissioner Norby's question, as far as what is in existence in San Diego County as far as PV projects, you know, what does San Diego County have to your knowledge, and how does this rank?
We believe that we are, we know that we're the first conditional use permit applications for solar projects in San Diego, first two, and this is at 46 megawatts, if it was constructed today, this would be the biggest project in the state of California, certainly the biggest in San Diego. In fact, I do not know of any other projects that are even close to this size in San Diego. Maybe a couple of megawatts on some places, wastewater treatment plants.
So from the time of a final approval to operation, how long is that?
Approval from this commission or approval?
Final from the county.
Final approval from the county to operation would probably be about a year. It will take us, we actually could get into, we hope to have this online and completed by the end of next year. So we hope to be in construction by spring of this year.
Next year.
I'm sorry, spring of next year.
And this would be the largest project in the state?
Would be the largest
project. And is it safe to say this has the, is this state-of-the-art technology?
Our technology, yes. We are a very conservative company, and we need to use technology that has been proven, has warranted, and is guaranteed to last for, you know, a minimum of 20 years. So it is state-of-the-art, but at the same time, PV technology has been around for 30 years, so it's a proven technology.
And so I don't know, I didn't see it. If you go, well, you don't need to put up the graphic, but these panels, do they rotate or are they fixed?
No, these are fixed, facing south. No moving parts, silent.
And to the question about the washings per year, what research do you have to come to the conclusion that this won't need more than 4 washings per year? And have you looked at other examples, existing facilities with the same technology?
We have a couple of pieces. One, it's the calculations. The washings are based on a standard analysis of, you know, how long would it take to wash a panel the way you do it in a traditional fashion with a pressure washer. There are other projects that we have looked at, their EAs. In this case, they were federal projects, where they came up with similar water consumption rates.
No, I'm sorry to interject, but my question, it goes to the number of washings per year, not how much water you're using or all of that. I would like to know to what degree you studied not other proposed projects, but actual projects similar to this, so that you have a high degree of confidence that, you know, dust in the desert is not going to affect the panels more than four times a year.
We did hire a PV panel expert firm that has specialized in photovoltaics for many, many years, BEW. They're not with me today, but they did do studies on this, and they came up with this recommendation, and it's a cost balance between labor and cleaning. So they have done studies on this, and they recommended our initial, our actual thought is that it will be 1 to 2 cleanings per year.
When I noticed in the environmental review that your original estimate was higher because you predicted a different protocol, I guess I would say, and then after further analysis, so can you explain the difference between originally proposed and the power washing, and then why that impacted the number of gallons that you estimated in the environmental review?
I think in the initial environmental review, we also did not include the water for construction. So in the revised numbers, that water includes that 4 acre feet per year includes construction for dust suppression. So that raised the number.
But the number of gallons per washing went down, as I recall, correct?
Yes, and I will say that over the last year or two, and as we've gotten more experience with these projects, they're getting more refined.
Okay. I'll have some more questions later after the rest of the public testimony.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Sir, relative to the planning group's comments about disturbed land versus undisturbed land, I'm a little confused. Perhaps staff might be better served to answer this question. Is it disturbed or is it undisturbed land?
Through the chair, Commissioner Woods, the land is considered native habitat, but in certain portions of the land, it's not what we would call pristine. If that explains it correctly. It's native habitat, but yet it's not pristine. There is junk and stuff in there and disturbed parts. So.
And they've been using it as that?
Excuse me?
And it's within the,
They're only going to impact if they crash.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully they won't. Yeah. Okay, the other issue is that was brought up in their letter of concern was the decommission of the site at the sunset or its life expectancy. What plans and guarantees do you have that we're not going to have thousands of photovoltaic cells gathering rust when you're done?
Right. We will have, and we are required as a mitigation to have a decommissioning plan, which will be funded, to pay for that. Of course, these projects really consist of steel and glass and then inverters and wires. So all the materials are very recyclable, but we do have the plan in place that will be funded to pay for the reclamation. I will say that we anticipate that this project will last, be in perpetuity or for as, could be much longer lifetime than just 20 years.
Okay. Thank you. Those are my two questions.
Okay. Commissioner Norby.
Your project will be the largest, but not for long. There's
right.
over 1,000 megawatts coming in the Central Valley and other places in Imperial County. So I am, of course, an advocate for renewable energy. We all are. I'm also San Diego native, and I've been going out to the desert for a long time, and I love the desert. The technology that you're using is an amorphous silicon panel, which has an efficiency of between 8% and 9%, I believe. The technology that they used in Nellis was a monosilicon panel, which has now an efficiency of between 18% and 19%. There's a lot of technical studies referred to in the staff document from SunPower, who is the manufacturer of that panel, that does 18%, 19%. So we have it's a cost issue, I understand that, but we have the technology right now to essentially have the same amount of energy coming from half the land using a monosilicon panel instead of an amorphous panel, 18% instead of 8 or 9%. In addition to that, we have single-axis and double-axis systems that can increase efficiency by 30% greater than that. So that's a technology that's available to us today, that we could essentially have this amount of electricity coming from something less than half the land. Now, we're in a private party situation here with, I believe, highly impacted lands next to an airport. There's very little you can do. I live in a city with an airport, so I understand that, and I know about that. But we have another two other projects coming before us. We have a state that is trying to asset manage their properties and their land, and so I have no doubt that we are going to have this continued encroachment of wind and solar, especially solar, out in our desert lands. And it really bothers me. Normally, I'm technology agnostic. I don't care how you get the energy, whether it's wind, solar, what type, and there are several types. But when we have a property such as that's so unique as the Anza-Borrego Desert State Park and the whole Anza-Borrego Desert Valley, it does start to concern me, and I do want to see. I mean, you have a choice of using less land or spacing them out so there's more desert in between so you don't have this kind of blue lake effect. It's something that I'm going to be looking at on projects, especially as we get to sites that are not good for this type of operation as this site. But I do want to make the public aware that this is not the highest efficiency technology that's being deployed. Even close. It is the least expensive per kilowatt hour technology that's being deployed. And then my question to you is that the mitigation of 2-to-1, so you're going to be purchasing some 600 and some odd acres. Is there a requirement to purchase that in the Anza-Borrego Basin, or can that be purchased anywhere up and down the state of California or the county?
Do you want to?
Through the chair, Commissioner Norby, the mitigation would have to occur in the ecoregion that the impacts occur.
And how do we define that ecoregion?
Biologically speaking, it would be basically the Anza-Borrego area. It's defined in the biological report, but we don't allow them to go somewhere else. It would have to be it would have to be similar, like functioning habitat.
Could they go to Palm Springs or Blythe or out in the Imperial Valley, or that would be similar like habitat, but not in the Anza-Borrego Valley?
Commissioner Norby, through the chair, no, it would be in San Diego County.
Okay.
There are options. They could go to the park. They could purchase other land and manage those with an endowment or find some other mitigation that's suitable within that region.
So if it was possible, I mean, one possibility could be it's contiguous with the Anza-Borrego Desert State Park and becomes part of the state park system.
Commissioner Norby.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we've got a lot of speakers, and there'll probably be a lot of follow-up questions. All those are raising some really interesting points of view. So let's have the planning group speak, if we could, and then see where we stand with regard to our break. And Tom, Beltran, Borrego Sponsor Group.
My name is Tom Beltran. I'm a member of the Borrego Springs Community Sponsor Group. I'm here to represent myself as an individual as well as the sponsor group. We recently received the revised MND. There were 421 pages of documentation. We've had less than a week and a half, probably about 8 days, to review it. And it's just not sufficient time to do a good job of review. I did skim the documents, and it looks like some significant changes to the MND and added additional mitigation measures. Pursuant to CEQA guideline section 15073.5, recirculation is required when new effects are identified in mitigations or project revisions must be added to reduce the effect or significance. Recirculation is also required when the proposed mitigation measures or project revisions will not reduce effects and new measures or revisions are required. I believe that either standard recirculation is required here. There's just too much documentation to go over, and you know, according to the original documents that were submitted, the technical reports, there were significant impacts that were not mitigated. And because new mitigation measures have been proposed, we feel that an additional 30-day comment period is warranted. The community sponsor group is all for solar. We have concerns about the number of projects that are going into the valley, the cumulative impacts to get the power out of the valley. We have a very small consumption, electrical consumption, and you know, back during the Sunrise Power Link, they wanted to run that through the state park. In order to get, not only do we have this project, but there are three other projects that I'm aware of, and there might be a fifth one coming along. These transmission lines are going to have to be upgraded, and we don't feel that the cumulative impacts have been adequately analyzed or disclosed. If you look at the documentation, the community had voluminous comments, and there's a lot of interest in the community. We would like to have another opportunity to review these documents and participate in the public process. Thank you.
Thank you. Could I ask a point of clarification? In your comments, you said that there were items that remain unmitigated, which is not my understanding. Are you saying that because there's additional mitigation measures proposed in the new documentation that
there, Yes, there are additional mitigation measures that are in the documentation. Again, we haven't had an adequate amount of time to analyze these properly, but just one example. In the hydrology, under the original mitigation measures, a product called polypavement was part of the mitigation measure for air quality, for dust control, and erosion. That product is impermeable. In the desert environment, where the hydrology is absolutely critical, and our storm events, especially in the summer, are extreme. They're short, but they're very intense. What happens is the water flow, the velocity of the water is increased, and there is an incision of the soil adjacent at the edge of these treated areas. In the most recent document, they suggested they eliminated the polypavement or the impermeable treatment, and they substituted in an impermeable one. But it's not. It's just an assertion. It's not clear that, since this product wasn't even named, it's not clear that it will be adequate for road surfaces or even in the non-traffic areas in this ecoregion.
Okay, thank you. Maybe we'll have some follow-up. We do have some follow-up.
Well, just a quick process question. I know you want to go to the break, and I was going to raise that and your other comments later with our, I see our CEQA experts here. But just a process question. I couldn't find it quickly, but I saw a letter in the file, and I wasn't sure. Is the Coast Law Group representing the sponsor group?
No.
I didn't know County Council if that was normal.
No. They're the ones who wrote my letter.
Oh, it's for you individually?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm here representing myself.
Oh, okay. So you're not speaking for the sponsor group?
I am speaking for the sponsor group. My personal comment is that I believe that a 30-day comment period is warranted. An additional 30-day comment period is warranted. The sponsor group does not. The sponsor group and I believe that a full EIR is warranted based on the conditions that were highlighted in the original technical reports. We have not had an opportunity to review all of the technical reports were revised.
Okay.
And this staff report is 421 pages. We've had less than a week and a half to review it.
I was just trying to get that clear because it was a little confusing. Is the attorney who represents you personally here today?
No.
Okay, because I was going to have questions on their letter as soon as I find it, but I'll come back to that later.
Okay. I'd like to take our break a little bit early today, but we'll be back before 10:30 and continue. Mm-hmm.